And what do pilots wish they'd done differently while logging their first 250 hours?
Are used avionics upgrades worth it in 2026? Or should you save for some new tech that's coming out in the future?
When should a student start practicing IFR-style flying even before instrument training?
Should I start learning about Class Bravo procedures as a student or wait until later?
Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com and let us be your co-pilot on this adventure.
Welcome back, everybody, to another amazing and awesome episode of the Aviation Mentors Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Carson, you look a little bit tired today.
I'm so tired.
Why are you tired?
I was up to like 3 a.m. last night and I was working on migrating everyone in Stratus from Slack to Bumble.
To a new system.
Yeah. And it was like the last day, you know, like the day of migration. So all the extra last 2 weeks or so of the messages and data, that all had to get moved over.
Well, it was worth it. It's looking good and it's saving like $50,000 a year. So
Thank you, Carson.
Well, today we've got another episode of listener questions. I think in the next day or two, we're going to start going through some of our early episodes and redoing them in video. And that'll be kind of neat. What's that?
Word for word?
No, not word for word.
With all the stutters and the and ums that we, had.
When Carson used to use an actual script and read from it, we're going to do that again.
Listen, I didn't know how to bring you back from a sidetrack at that point.
No, my sidetracks go off onto tangents for like 20 minutes sometimes.
I know. I'm proud of you.
Thanks. Well, I'm happy we are here today to do some more listener questions. I'm really excited though when we start redoing some of those early episodes and it'd be weird to see if they change at all. I know the first one we're going to do is redoing our episode number one, and that is your first flight makes you a pilot or your first solo makes you a pilot. Yeah. I wonder how that's going to change if I remember everything still the same way that I read it to everyone 2.5 years ago on the podcast for the first time.
I don't know. You were a real CFI back then. Now you're just kind of a fake CFI.
I know. I don't fly as much as I used to. I try to fly as much as I can.
Yeah, we don't fly with students. Like you were still flying with students at that time.
Yeah, I was flying with students a lot. Speaking of flying with students, I know it's a tangent, but we'll get to our listener questions today. Austin turns 15 in just 3 more months.
That's weird.
So that means he can solo at 16.
Yeah. It's time to get him in a plane.
And yeah, right after that, after his birthday, I think I'm going to start flying with him at least once a week. We're going to go every weekend to the airport, maybe a little more.
That'll be some good bonding.
Yeah.
That should get him through the terrible teens.
Well, he's already in the terrible teens. So hopefully this works out nice. But I am, I'm looking forward to seeing him fly. I think he's going to solo really, really well on his 16th birthday. Cool. It'll be cool. I'll solo him first thing in the morning. And then he could take the car that we take to the airport and he can get his driver's license same day.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. First solo and driver's license.
And it's a lot safer to fly than what he does on his little e-bike.
Yeah, that's true. It's a true story. Cool. Well, first question we have, Carson.
Is it worth paying extra to fly a little bit more modern trainer?
No. There's my answer. No, it is not. You should not go spend $600 an hour to go fly a Diamond or with a full glass cockpit or a Cirrus or.
But have you seen the full glass cockpit?
Yeah, they are really so nice. Or brand new Cessnas or something. If you're paying some crazy premium to do that, you're wasting your money.
Yeah. If you're doing it for flight training, I agree. If you're doing it for personal fun, you're going on a little trip, doing something for the weekend, I think then, yeah, I would splurge, right? If you have the cash to do so, I would do it. It's a nice little experience. And if you have passengers, it's just fun.
Okay, yes. If you're just doing flight training, I'll go with that. Then
if you're doing flight training, you're still flying an airplane. You're still getting the same concepts, still having the same experience. And I think everyone should learn on steam gauges first.
I can go back and forth on the steam gauges versus learning on glass first. Because all the modern airplanes, if you're going to be a commercial pilot, they all have glass cockpits now.
Yeah, but it's a lot easier to pick that up later. I mean, most of the planes you're flying when you're trying to save money are going to be older planes with the six-pack.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I would go with that. I really enjoy flying six-pack airplanes. I also enjoy flying glass cockpit aircraft, but it's definitely not worth it if you're just doing your training. Now, you do want to do a little bit of training in glass cockpit because you will, as soon as you're done with training,
you're going to end up in one.
You're going to end up in one. Yeah. So you need to at least know how the systems work. But I know the systems in jets are a lot different than our little Garmin systems and 172s and Cherokees.
Don't
and
talk bad about them.
I know you do. You like the little airplanes. So that's kind of my two cents about that. You have anything to opine on?
I don't have anything else to opine on.
Opine.
My love for glass cockpits. but this next one kind of leads into that because I've done a lot of flying in my first 250 hours on glass cockpits. And what do pilots wish they'd done differently while logging their first 250 hours?
Save money.
Save money, for sure. Save money. Oh, man, if I wasn't flying at this flight school with the total cheapskate.
I know. Winner, right here. That's me.
I think saving money is just a big thing. And you don't really understand how, like splitting time, it's not something that, you know, just comes naturally. You don't just think of it because there's so many regulations and rules. And the first time I heard about it, that I can fly with another pilot and log PIC time, it didn't make sense. It didn't click until it was explained
to me. And cross country and total time.
Exactly. It's a huge help.
Well, the total time counts, the PIC and the cross country, they can count, but everybody can get total time.
Yeah. So
that's what counts to get to the 250, everybody.
Exactly.
I was going to say that too. So I would have said I would have time built more. And there's some flight schools that milk you. And when I say milk you, they milk your wallet. They will tell you that you need to fly with the CFI every hour of the flight that you ever do besides the minimum required solo time. There's so much money you could save by time building with other pilots. It's unbelievable.
I mean, roughly 2 hours of flying with the CFI, just the instruction alone, equals about an hour of flight, like plane rental.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of places are starting to charge up to $100 an hour for CFI time now.
That's crazy. Because are the CFIs getting a majority of that?
No, they're not. It's also getting more and more expensive to run a flight school. A battery the other day, I heard Rich talk about it, $500 for a Cessna 172 battery.
How much are they for a car?
I don't know. I haven't bought a battery in a long time.
Your whole car's a battery.
I know. My Cybertruck's all a battery. Yes. Oh,
God forbid that one goes out.
Yeah. Speaking of batteries, on a side tangent, we were out for my sister's birthday the other day, yesterday, actually, last night. My son's on his bike riding around, calls me up and says, Rad Power Bikes caught on fire. This is just weeks after they had a worldwide recall on their batteries because they were catching on fire, and then their headquarters caught on fire.
That's ironic, and it points out a big issue.
And they're going bankrupt now. I normally don't like thinking ill on companies because I have my own companies and I want them to succeed. And anybody who's running a good company, I want them to succeed. But that one, I'm happy they're going out of business.
You haven't had a good experience with them?
I've had terrible experiences every time. I used to own a whole bunch of them. I sold them all and got rid of them.
I know. You told me about the whole thing.
Yeah. It was six months to get my bicycle fixed. Are you kidding me? 6 months?
Easy.
It's unbelievable. And then I complained to the manager in a really nice way. And she said, yeah, there's nothing we can do. I mean, she just was rude about it. I said, okay, no problem. I will never buy your stuff ever again. She didn't care. I'm wondering if she has a job anymore.
I think it's 50-50. If it was even a battery that lit that thing on fire, someone is angry.
I thought the same thing. Well, I know this has nothing to do with airplanes and flight training, but there are people that try to bring their e-bikes, their fold-up e-bikes, and the batteries with them while they fly. And this is just a thing to keep an eye on. If you are going to do that and you are going to bring your batteries, especially if they're a Rad Power Bike battery, then you should definitely watch where it's at.
I never really consider that because I usually fly with just my flight bag that has the bare minimum. But like, what should you or should you not be flying with when you're not flying commercially? So there's rules, but there's slightly different rules for what you can and can't bring.
Well,
do you have any idea on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Depends where you're going. I mean, if you're in Alaska, you better carry a fire starter, some blankets.
A firearm, probably.
Probably a firearm, as long as that's legal wherever you're at, or if it's legal for you. It's like a bear gun, maybe. I don't know, some flares. I mean, I'd carry like a full-on camping set if I was in the wilderness. If I'm going to the desert, I would make sure that I have closed-toe shoes. That's a big one. Can you imagine you landing in the middle of the desert and something happened to your sandals while you were flying, or they broke, and then you had to go walk across the hot desert to get somewhere? You're just going to go die.
That would suck. Yeah.
It would suck.
That would suck.
Yeah, big time. So, I mean, those types of things, I would carry a knife with you for sure, some rope.
But is there anything you shouldn't fly with?
Like fireworks, I guess. I don't know. There's a lot of things you probably shouldn't fly with. Things that catch on fire, probably should not fly with.
Lithium batteries?
I don't have a problem with that because it's not pressurized.
Does it become a problem once it is pressurized?
I think it's the pressurization and the altitude.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. I don't have any problem bringing lithium batteries on my airplanes.
On my airplanes.
Okay, my that airplanes. Makes
sense. Cool. I'm out of thoughts on that one.
Oh, you're out of thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, you went down the e-bike tangent.
I did go to the e-bike tangent. So sorry, everybody. All right. So here is another one. Speaking of kind of techie stuff, let's talk about this one. And this is more for kind of aircraft owners, I would say, or maybe even flight school owners, which are in a sense aircraft owners as well. Are used avionics upgrades worth it in 2026? Or should you save for some new tech that's coming out in the future?
I've never owned an aircraft, so I'll have to defer to you on that one.
I have owned a lot of airplanes and still own a few of them. I'm going to sell the Icon.
You decided you're going to sell it?
I got the logbooks the other day from Rich.
How many hours does it have on it?
Like 650 or 700, something like that. 600 or 700.
Are those all you?
No. Probably like 300 of me. If that.
Interesting. How much are you selling it for?
I don't know yet. 220, 250.
That's just outside my budget.
I know. Yeah.
Which is about 1% of that.
So. 1%. 20,000 still? Oh, no, that's.
No, it's 10%, buddy. You're almost there. 10%.
Yeah. I got to go another 10th. 2,000. So I've done a lot of avionics upgrades in my life. And I will say that it's always worth doing the avionics upgrades whenever you can afford them and whenever it makes sense from a practicality example. So if you have a plane that's not IFR, you want to get it converted IFR, then obviously it's worth the upgrade for you, especially if you're doing training in that plane or something like that. Other than that, things are always going to get cheaper in the long run. So how long do you want to use whatever you're using and just fly with it before changing it? There's been a bunch of upgrades to avionics radios by Garmin, and like even replacing six-pack instruments with digital instruments. Those things have gotten TSO approval. So there's a lot of things you could.
Well, how long do avionics actually last? Like if I'm buying something brand new, like a G500, G1000.
Can't buy a G1000. G1000s are not available for you to purchase and then put into another aircraft. They're not certified that way. Just so you know.
They have to come like that?
They have to come from the factory like that.
Interesting. Okay. Yep. Well, assuming I'm buying a G500 then.
Okay. That one you can do.
You can buy.
Yes.
How long am I expecting that to last?
I think they discontinued the G500, by the way. But yes, I get what your point is, Carson. If you bought some avionics.
Today's the day. I'm going to hit you.
Today's the day. You guys are going to see it here live on Aviation Mentors. Congratulations.
I'll put everyone on YouTube for
that,
sure.
That would. Yeah, there we go. And if you're only listening to this, I just fake hit him with the sound effect. if you're going to go do that, I mean, there's other avionics that are coming out over time. Just matters whenever you're ready.
But the lifespan of avionics, are they like 5, 10 years?
I don't know, 20 years probably.
By hours?
20 years. I mean, I'll tell you this. If you have a brand new, nice, maybe used G500 in your airplane, because you can't get one new, I don't think, anymore. If you have one of those in and you have the sun beating down on it all the time, guess what? It's going to go out pretty quickly. It's going to fry it. So what can you do about that? Replace it.
Well, I mean, I know like iPhones, you got 2 or 3 years. Pretty much now.
Well, that's only because the programs on it are continuously upgrading. Programs on G1000 or G500 or Avadyne systems or Dynon systems, none of those are changing. The only thing that's changing is like the charts and things like that, but that's a preset item, right? So they're not going to go out per se for a very long time.
Nice. So it still makes sense to buy them used rather than brand new.
Sometimes it makes it.
Depending on how much love it got beforehand.
Yeah, it depends on how much love it got before. It depends on if you can actually take that legally out of one airplane and put it into another. Example is a G1000. You can't do that. I mean, there's a lot of factors behind it. Wait list to get new stuff sometimes is a factor. Warranties are sometimes a factor if that matters something to you.
Which it should if you're spending this much money.
Yeah. I mean, who's doing the work? Are they going to put brand new stuff in and put brand new wiring? Are they going to use brand new stuff and use your existing wiring, which I do not do. Please don't do that. And it's going to be more expensive to wire everything back up again, but it's worth it. So there's a lot of different factors for you to look at and try to figure out.
Interesting. What's the wait time typically like for those?
I don't know anymore.
I remember it was like
six months or a year.
Yeah.
I think you can get stuff pretty quick now. I mean, 1 or 2 months ordered and put onto the, depending what shop you go to. I mean, there's shops that are still a year or two out, but yeah,
cool.
You can, if you want a brand new avionics, you can get them pretty quick now.
Well, I think we tapped out avionics. Want to talk about something better?
I don't know. I can talk avionics all day.
I know, but this is fun.
You know what time it is, Carson?
Time's a brain.
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
You know, Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show.
The show.
Next thing we're going to talk about is...
what's the right way to manage anxiety about engine failure on every takeoff?
Ooh.
I know that an anxious student probably wrote this. Probably as anxious as I get.
Yeah, it's like, and you have nothing, and you just go down.
You know, it's just a nice little glide, and you lose airspeed real quick. And what's the worst of that?
You don't lose airspeed real quick. You maintain airspeed, Carson.
You maintain airspeed?
Yeah, you maintain until you get to the ground. You do not lose your airspeed. Your airspeed is life.
So what would you tell a student who's so worried about this?
I would say...
besides keep your airspeed.
I would say, guess what? Your plane turns into a glider.
Really?
Yeah. Don't worry about the engine going out.
Unless
the engine
it's Piper Arrow. That thing's a brick.
No. Everyone calls it a brick. what goes down faster than a Piper Arrow without an engine? A brick. No, it's not true. They still... even a helicopter glides.
I'm pretty sure it had like a 1 to 0.5 glide ratio.
Even the helicopters glide, Carson.
You know? Yeah, they do. I've seen them.
Auto rotation. Just like that.
Just like that? Is that easy?
I'm full of sound effects today for some reason. I don't know.
I like it. Keep going. No, bad.
Bad. Sorry, that's not what happens.
That's not what an anxious student wants to hear.
No, but in reality, it just turns into a glider. So just allow it to glide down. And sure, you're going to put it into a place that you don't want it to put it. And is, I don't know, something going to get ripped off of the bottom of the airplane, like, I don't know, the landing gear. Maybe. Who cares? You're going to be alive. So I wouldn't worry about it. Land in that field. And the majority of the time, you're probably just going to land in the field. Literally, it's going to be a landing. It's just a power off landing. There's no power.
Yeah, power off.
Yeah.
Short field.
And just remember, maintain airspeed. Airspeed, airspeed, airspeed. Yep. ABC. Airspeed, best place to land.
Checklist
or communicate. Always be closing that airplane on the ground is what you need to be doing.
You should.
When you have no engine, that's all that matters.
I agree. What about in a multi? You know, does it get a little bit more dangerous having a multi-engine where you have an engine failure after takeoff?
No. Control, power, drag, identify, verify, fix, or feather, baby. Put everything forward.
I love your confidence with it. I know you've said it so many times, and I know you've taught so many multi-engine lessons that it's just instant. I remember back at the flight school, Brandon had this big packet he would give out to multi-engine students who wanted to do
23 pages. Exactly.
He's so proud of it. Who wanted to do like an accelerated multi-course. And the first thing he'd say, like he would hand them the full packet and they'd be like, okay, like, what do I need to come back, fully knowledgeable about? And he would list off.
Control, power, drag, identify, verify, fix, or feather.
Thank you.
Baby.
I think you leave that out because they were your students at the time.
They were, sorry.
But that's all he would say. And I'd just be sitting at the desk just watching him. And like, he'd get so excited and say it as fast as he could and be like, come back knowing that. Oh, and everything else in the packet too. But that one actually stuck with me.
And I wanted you to chair fly it. So control, power, drag, identify, fix, or feather.
Because you do have to do it a little bit rapidly.
Yeah, that didn't even work. There we go. Rapid like that.
I'm so happy you're having a good day.
I'm having a great day.
It was awesome.
Look at how sunny it is. I hope everybody got out of that. Just fly the airplane, fly the airplane, fly the airplane. Remember, airspeed is king. Carson said, you lose airspeed. No, you don't. You control your airspeed. And you control your airspeed by pitch. And you make sure that you continue down.
The only issue is you have to continue down. There's no going back.
Yeah, there's no going up. Just continue down.
But another safe thing to do is when you're flying into a new airport or you're flying out of one or you have an instructor and you have some time to look around. It's good to identify around the airport saying, hey, if I had an engine failure on takeoff or on landing, what would I do? Where would I go? Riverside was pretty easy. There was a big open golf course. Yeah, right on the other side, right in front of
it. Yeah. Most airports, there's a golf course, at least in California. Right at the other side of their own runway.
All over. And I think a lot of the Midwest is just pretty empty. I feel like they have some good shots there.
They might not even have golf course. They might just have fields.
Yeah. But regardless, look for a big open field. They're all over. Yeah. If they're not,
land on the freeway.
Freeway. Anything. Land a tree.
I remember hearing
about someone that did that.
And, yeah.
I think it was at Pomona.
Landed in a tree. They lived?
Lived.
Oh,
started flying a few months later.
Wow.
Got back on the horse.
See, there you go. Giddy up. All right.
I was expecting some sort of like giddy up horse noises or something.
I'm not good at making horse noises. I don't know. All right. So I hope everyone listening to this is having as good of a time as we are. Carson is tired and delirious.
I'm deliriously tired.
And I'm just in a good mood for once. Miracles do happen.
Oh, I'm glad we get this on video sometimes. That's fantastic. All right. When should a student start practicing IFR style flying even before instrument training? So I'm assuming they just mean flying with a hood. Maybe?
I don't know. I think that students overthink this. By the way, when you should start is when you have to do your 3 hours of hood time mandatory for private pilot certification.
That's a good time to start.
I think that's a good time to start. And I think you should do that with the CFI.
Opposed to doing solo hood work?
You should not be doing solo hood work. Illegal. What you should be doing, though, is you should be flying a lot of time building, working on your either instrument rating or... On what, Carson? Commercial certificate.
You have to have hood time for commercial?
Not really, but you can get...
I mean, you just need time building.
But you can get time building. Yeah.
And that's a really good time to actually do it. You have one pilot who's flying, or at least keeping lookout, however the actual split is.
Mm-hmm.
And the other's doing hood work. And then you switch on and off. And that's a good time to gain PIC, IFR time. What was that? Oh, total time. That's really important. Yeah, total time
is the reason why you're doing it, remember? In cross-country time.
I never really had a time build. I just kind of flew around and messed around and I have a bunch of hours.
It's a waste of money.
Pretty much,
yeah. But you also weren't doing it to go be in the airlines.
So. No, I'm just doing it for fun.
So outside of just starting to practice IFR style flying like that, you should be asking your flight instructor to mix things up. Whenever you are working on your commercial certificate or something like it, unless you're in a 141 program or something highly structured, obviously that's not going to really happen.
But this is really good before instrument training.
I mean, you can't really do much before instrument training except for train for instruments.
Yeah. I mean, understanding your panel is the first part, and getting familiar with instruments is the whole point of your private. And then once you get an instrument, that's when things get a lot more workload heavy, right? You start having charts and maps and way more weather. And then you also lose your windows. So a lot of different things go out at the same time and it becomes a heavy workload process instead of just the nice, easy, casual flying, which is the whole reason that the instrument's so intense for a lot of people.
Yeah, you can chair fly. You can start practicing some
approach plates
on the simulator. Understanding
how to read them is important, especially reading them a little bit more rapidly than you would on the ground, just lackadaisically.
Yeah. And I wouldn't just start instrument training without having some actual instrument lessons, by the way. You need to actually have lessons. Don't just start trying to do it by yourself while you're doing private pilot stuff.
You're going to get yourself bad habits, and it's
harder to break.
It's a lot to learn.
It is. So speaking of instrument training, Carson, when are you going to start taking up instrument training?
Probably when you start paying me more.
I pay him too much already, everybody. On to divergent task. I want to start my helicopter training. So if anybody knows a good helicopter school locally in either Orange County, Southern California, or in Tampa, Florida, please let me know. I want to start doing helicopter training.
I thought you were doing it once before.
I was a long time ago at Riverside Airport, and somebody split the skids and crashed the helicopter.
That's when you stopped?
Yeah, because they didn't get a new helicopter.
Imagine if I stopped.
I also could not fit in a Robinson back then.
I probably can't.
You cannot.
Damn. I got to make plans for a big boy. I need a Chinook.
No, you can fly. you can fly an R-44.
I want the Chinook. Forget about our mindset now. I know Cal Fire has one. It keeps flying over my house.
I'm sure they do. Yeah. Can't fly an R-22, but I can. Ooh, okay. You hear that? Oh, it sounded like an airplane, but it was just a motorcycle outside. We're thinking airplanes, and I was like, oh my God, there's a low-flying airplane. Where's it at? I don't see it.
Do you want to hear low-flying airplane noises?
Of course I do.
When do you want to hear them?
Right now.
Meow.
Wow. Yeah, Carson's a little too tired. Speaking of too tired, we only have one question left today, everybody. So if you're excited for more, or if you're tired of us at this point, you can always turn us off. I wouldn't, though, because this next one is our last question of the day, and then we're closing up. So you might as well stay for the last one. Should I start learning about Class Bravo procedures as a student or wait until later? This is a definite question from a student, because this would not be coming from anybody else.
I agree.
And there's no problem with that. I always say there's the only dumb questions, the ones you don't ask. So this is a good one for somebody, and I'm sure it's going to be good for a lot of people. What's your opinion, Carson?
Class Bravo procedures should be taught regardless of where you're flying at and regardless of your stage in aviation. It's something that you should hit on frequently, because that is an airport you cannot make mistakes at. That's airspace you can't make mistakes in. But I'd also like to opine that it is not a good idea, just knowing from how I was a student pilot, to go and fly around Class Bravo a lot as a student pilot. And you definitely can't do it solo without an endorsement, but I think it's really intense. It's really overwhelming, and you're not quite ready for that workload.
Yeah, I would semi-agree. And the only reason why I semi-agree is because I did my long cross country when I was working on my private under a Class Bravo airport shelf. And they actually cleared me into the Bravo. I knew I did not have the endorsement to be cleared into the Bravo. From my instructor. So I just said cleared into the Bravo and then stayed outside of it. I remember what I did on that cross country. And I think that people need to know and understand Class Bravo procedures as a student, because you are tested on them. By the way, you're also tested on Class Alpha, but there's not as much they're going to ask you about in Class Alpha, because you can't fly instruments anyways or go up there.
You just need to stay out of it.
Need to stay out of it. And Class Bravo, you just really need to understand how to get into it and how to get out of it, right? What the policies and procedures are. So it's not that hard.
Well, you know, now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure Salt Lake City Airport is both Class Bravo and has a flight school at it.
It probably does. There's a lot of Bravos
it's not unrealistic to go learn and start flying at one, but your experience is going to be a little bit more intense, right? The workload is heavier just right from the very beginning.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind it. I really enjoy going to Class Bravo airports, because it's very structured. They tell you exactly what to do. There's no ambiguity.
No, they hold your hand the entire time because you're the biggest liability they have.
Exactly. They tell you, they give you a heading. You just have to fly it. Yeah. They give you an altitude. You just have to fly it. They will literally vector you into final.
I think there's never a time that you're safer. You are being watched from start to finish. Your entire flight there.
Yeah, they're keeping you out of it. Yeah. So you should learn a lot about Class Bravo. Don't be too worried about it. It's actually easier than you think. As long as you can listen to directions, follow the directions, And
there's just low tolerance for mistakes.
Yeah. Just execute on those directions. And by the way, if it's really busy for them, they'll just tell you they can't let you in.
Or out.
Sometimes or out. Yeah, that is true. I've been trying to leave Vegas one time, and they kept me sitting on the ramp for like 2 hours. I was actually worried about fuel because I was burning so much sitting on the ground.
I was stuck at John Wayne, which is a Charlie, for about an hour.
That's insane.
Yeah, I was stuck in that little, it's not the run-up. There's the other area.
I don't know.
I forgot, but I was stuck there just like in the middle of kind of like both runways and like all the taxiways, just like, hey guys, like to leave. And there were just so many big planes just all around me. I just felt like the little guy just hanging out. Wait,
you were.
I was.
You were. So long story long, definitely should start learning about Class Bravo as a student. Do not wait until later. You need to know at least the bare minimums, especially if you're flying near one. You really need to know.
Yeah.
So. Well, I think that's the last question of the day. I hope you are enjoying our slightly longer format. I know we're going for 30 to 50 minutes. I think today's going to be around a 30-minute episode or so. And I'm hoping you're enjoying it. I know we are. We're enjoying chit-chatting and talking a little bit more and hopefully be a little more silly and fun and make this not just a mentorship podcast, but also a fun one for you. So we thank you for listening. But if you'd like to reach out to either one of us, you can reach us on our emails, Brandon@aviationmentors.com or Carson@aviationmentors.com. As you know, LinkedIn is the primary place to get a hold of us. That's where we enjoy connecting with other people. You can find me, Brandon Martini, on LinkedIn. I'm the number one best looking Brandon Martini on LinkedIn. I'm actually the only one as well. So both work. And can also look for the handsome Carson Vasquez. There are several of him on LinkedIn. So you have to select the proper one.
Are there more?
There's more than one.
I thought it was special.
Nope. Sorry. and if you'd like to reach our producer, Mark, you can reach him at producer@aviationmentors.com. We're also looking for people now to come and be a guest on the podcast. If you would like to be a guest, just like we had the doctor last week, if you'd like to be a guest on our podcast, please reach out to us. We would love to have you. I know that we have some of our loyal listeners send out every once in a while. Maybe we should have some of our loyal listeners on. If you are a loyal longtime listener, we would love to have you on the podcast. So reach out to producer Mark and we will get you on. We will vet you a little bit first. So just to make sure you're a real person, not AI. Don't forget to hit like, follow, subscribe, share, do all the things you're supposed to do on whatever streaming platform you're watching or listening to us on. It's really a huge part of helping us grow the podcast. And more importantly, help us grow the aviation community.
Thank you, everybody. And as we wrap up for the day, remember, here to guide you in your aviation journey. So fly safe and enjoy the ride.
See ya.